Well, good morning and welcome. We're so happy to see everyone here. Church is a team sport, and so I want to thank Jenna and the worship team for your thoughtfulness in the song selection. So you have probably noticed by now as we've gone through Colossians, there's been a few songs we've sung each week. The point of that was to help reinforce the ideas that we feel like that this message from Colossians is and God is trying to teach to us. So thank you, Jenna, for your thoughtfulness in that. Worship is good because it makes me stop and slow down, and I'm not always good at doing that. And so we gather together and we pause. And it helps me to remember to see you. And it helps me remember who I'm not seeing today. I know there's always such a mix of emotions in a crowd of this size, people going through different things, people feeling stress and anxiety, people excited by the start of a new semester and maybe anxious at the same time about that. I know that for at least one person in our congregation, this is a very painful time of the year, a very painful anniversary of grief. So we bring all of this together and we stop and we acknowledge that we see one another and that God sees and that God cares. Today we're finishing up our series on Colossians chapter 3, because we started in chapter 4. Because we wanted to say hello to Jesus and to get to meet some of the people that Jesus, when you say hello to him, will introduce you to. So we saw kind of the human side of it, and then we held up Jesus in Colossians chapter 1. And we want to do that every week. We want to hold up Jesus, because if he is not steering this, we don't want to be a part of that. So this week we finish our lessons in Colossians, a series where Jesus is first, Jesus is all. And what does that mean? I was reminded as I studied this chapter of a story, and this is a war story, and I'm trying to be careful with war stories because I don't want to like glorify the violence, but war is a very real part of this world, right? And brings out the worst in us, but it also provides these glimpses. God meets us in those broken places and provides some beautiful stories of what humans can be when they reach towards God in very difficult times. So I was reminded recently as I was studying for this about the Navajo code talkers, and it's not apparently fair to say Navajo code talkers because there were about 30 plus other tribes that also participated in that venture. And the point was that these code talkers, they could use their native tongue to share battle plans very quickly with one another. Normally you'd need like a decoder machine that might take up to 30 minutes. So if you can imagine when life and death is on the line, time is of the essence. So Native Americans from all over the country signed up, enlisted, and helped us. And just at Iwo Jima alone, that battle on the island in the Pacific, over 800 battlefield communications were shared in the first 48 hours. They can be read with 100% accuracy instantly, and people got where they needed to go. A couple of things really stuck out when I thought about this story and what these people were doing. One is that they used a little-known language that the adversary couldn't learn fast enough, so that gave them the advantage. And they were able to subvert the enemy plans. The second part is that they lived out of this code of conduct where they enlisted in a time when they weren't even really considered honored citizens of the United States. So they lived to a higher level of honor than they were given. And I see that in Colossians chapter 3 and what we are called to be. And I think as we think about this idea of speaking in code, that is a lot of what's happening here in Colossians chapter 3. We're going to read this together. And I think the problem is that often we're the ones who are ignorant of what the code is. So we're going to talk about that together. As we read Colossians 3, we're going to look at verses 18 through the start of chapter 4. Colossians 3:18 reads like this. Wives, submit to your husbands in a way that is appropriate in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and don't be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything because this pleases the Lord. Parents, don't provoke your children in a way that ends up discouraging them. Slaves, obey your masters on earth in everything. Don't just obey like people pleasers when they are watching. Instead, obey with the single motivation of fearing the Lord. And whatever you do, do it from the heart for the Lord and not for people, You know that you will receive an inheritance as a reward. You serve the Lord Christ. But evildoers will receive their reward for their evil actions. There is no discrimination. Masters, be just and fair to your slaves, knowing that you yourselves have a master in heaven. As Jenna and I were talking about these lessons and trying to figure out which pieces do we want to highlight, this is not the one she thought we should go for. And I agreed in a lot of ways. Paul uses this common cultural code. These things were very common in the Greco-Roman world, where they would address how do we function as a society. In fact, the Romans saw this as being very critical to maintaining peace, that at the household level, things need to operate at a certain level. And so at first glance, it looks like Paul just kind of copies and pastes, and it's just exactly like you would read from any Roman orator, or from any Greek like Aristotle, or from any Jew for that matter like Josephus. So here's a couple of quotes that sound a lot like what we just read. The woman, says Josephus, and says the law, in his opinion, is in all things inferior to man. And then Aristotle had this to add. Although the parts of the soul are present in all of them, talking about the members of the household, they are present in different degrees. For the slave has no deliberative faculty at all. The woman has, but is without authority. The child has, but is immature. So it must necessarily be with moral virtues also. All may be supposed to partake of them, but only in such manner and degree as is required by each for the fulfillment of his duty. Thank you, Aristotle. So we read these together in this context that these words are flowing out of and flowing and speaking into. And some of those words probably don't sit quite right with you. And I think that's Paul's point in some ways as well. These words that I just read to you from Colossians have often been used and often been abused, sometimes to the point that we might as well be speaking another language than I think Paul himself was communicating in, which we are, English, Greek, but that's another point. So we think slavery, obviously wrong, and we eventually got rid of it. So why not just tell us that in the first place, Paul? Why not just take us there? Why not just get us to the place where we can skip a lot of the trouble of working this out? Because we know this text has been used to defend various positional authorities. It's been used for and against slavery. So in our background in the Stone-Campbell movement, Stone and Campbell were both against slavery, although they both owned slaves. They emancipated them. But then they would go to church on Sunday, and the slaves would sit in the balcony because some of their church members owned slaves. And so there was this real tension about what the Bible says about slaves and how they behave and what we do in our place and time with institutions such as that. I ran into some of the result of that in my own life not that long ago, just so you know, this isn't like an 1800s problem or a first century problem. I've told you before about my friend Miss Amanda Johnson. When she was converted to Christ in the 1940s in Arkansas, she was invited to sit in a side room at the church where the white people could sit in the middle. She hung in there. She sat in the side room until they finally let her in the main room. And then by the time that I got to meet her in the early thousands, I got to sit at this woman's feet and learn about people who walk with dignity and honor. This white boy from Kansas City learned the gospel at this woman's feet, and it was beautiful. Something I think about Colossians 3 is that the beauty of the gospel meets us in our most cringeworthy places. The gospel, I think, probably exists because of cringeworthy situations, actually. God never stepped into a culture, I think, where he said, I can't work with these people. Although you see some stories in scripture that might hint that there was times he was close to that. In this culture that Paul is writing into, children were valued only on their potential usefulness. I'm going to put up with you because eventually I'm going to get a return on my investment. Wives were valued on performance. sexually and otherwise. Love was not a necessary part of that relationship because most of these marriages were arranged anyway. And of course, the man was the one who had all the moral authority and aptitude, right? And into this, Paul speaks. And he sprinkles the gospel and he challenges these people with what seems like very common language copied and pasted from culture and yet sounds, I think, very different to the ears of these readers than it would have anywhere else. And so I wonder if we have ears to hear. So pull out your Jesus decoder rings. Let's see if we can see the implications of what Paul is doing here. While it seems like Paul is just kind of going with the flow of society, he actually basically blows this thing up, at least almost, mostly. But institutions don't die easy, do they? And if you do get to blow one up and deconstruct, there's another one that's probably not very far behind that may not be any better and possibly might be worse. So it doesn't always help to just deconstruct an institution if there's a hateful and selfish attitude waiting and lurking. And so Paul speaks into this society, this culture that has been gaining steam for a long time and doesn't just stop on a dime, right? And people are wondering, well, this is free in Christ territory now. Who's the boss? And so he gives them this code of conduct remix. And so even as broken institutions march forward day after day, maybe hopefully some of them slowly breathing their last dying breaths, this radically new attitude of Christ followers living in and among that begins to seep out and subvert within. The lines begin to dissolve, the ground begins to even out, mutual love begins to shatter these strongholds of power. Because when you look at a husband who truly learns how to love his wife, and she loves him in return, you kind of quit asking, who's in charge here? Who's the boss? I think maybe you still ask that question, but it just gets forwarded on, and we say, well, we know Jesus is. What would he have me do here? I love how Paul slides this one in right at the end. Oh, and by the way, masters, watch yourselves, because you also have a master who's in heaven. Imagine what that must have sounded like to somebody who's used to being the final word and authority in every situation. I think that might have taken them down a peg. There is a new household. There is a new code of conduct. There is a church of Christ, his body. And so while I think it sounds kind of like, Paul, you're just reinforcing some negative ideas and you're just forwarding on the status quo, I think there's something very, very much different going on here. He says, I want you to think like this. Seek things that are above, not that are beneath. Bring the kingdom of heaven into your home. And if you're going to do that, you have to imagine what that looks like. For heaven to exist here on earth. So I think seeking things above should raise our view of leadership, or it might lower it depending on your perspective, because it raises it to the level of service. Can you imagine the beautiful place it would be if a government actually existed to serve its people? We dream of those days, right? That's what we want. That is what the kingdom of heaven is. See, the problem with institutions and positions is they tend to try to perpetuate and preserve themselves. And once I get a little taste of something good, I want to keep it just for me. And yet Paul says, that's not how this is going to work. How do you subvert disorder with God's order here? That is the question that a Christian has to ask. And Jesus says, you've heard it said, but I'm raising the bar. This is heart work. We can't just put a new system in place and hope it works differently this time if we are still the same people that we were before. These inequitable partnerships, they're just not going to work. And so we close the gap between heaven and earth, and I think that's directly proportionate to the gap between me and you, between my love for you, genuine love and wanting your best. Because we often want to tackle the world's problems, or at least attack them, right? But what am I using as my weapon? And so this is what I think we need to come down to, where the rubber hits the road, and what Jenna challenged us to think about 2 weeks ago was this level of prejudice in our hearts. And that's a great exercise, except I don't know how to do that, because I'm not very self-aware. And not many people that you walk up to, you say, well, why'd you do that? And they say, I think it's because I'm so racist, right? I think it's because I don't like men or women or this group or that. None of us tend to overtly think that way. And yet we all have these inherent ideas in us, or maybe these ideas that we are inherently better than those around us. It can seep out very subtly. It's very sinister. So I felt this a little bit yesterday. We were doing staff training, and we're talking about our Myers-Briggs type. And the go-to in my mind is to think, that can work, my way's better. I'm just glad I was born the person that I am, with all these things that have shaped me into this wonderful, lovable person. Some of you have some work to do. We just tend to just automatically think, my way, better, anything else, different, probably bad, probably dangerous. And so how do I identify my feelings of inherent superiority to people around me? How do you do that? How do you call out my thinking I'm better than you, or vice versa? Here's a few questions, so I hope you have a pencil, because you're going to want to write these down. Or not, depending on how much you want to think about this. Consider circles of social engagement that you run in. Where do you struggle to want the best for those people? Who is the face of that person that you just struggle to want their good? Who is the person you struggle to even give them the benefit of the doubt that, as misguided as they are in their actions, maybe they're not evil? Where are those places in life where you say, if I had my way, things would be better? Strong-arming for the greater good often leads to resentment of that thing, even if it actually was good. So we need to be careful about getting our way and how we go about that. Who are those people that you just want them to get what's coming to them? Not that you want them to learn, that's good. You want them to learn the hard way. They need to feel this one. Maybe instead, I wish they would learn to grow in love. Is that what I want for someone? I wish that the fruit of the Spirit was more and more real in their life. That's a different attitude. Do I see others with the eyes of Christ, who they are beneath all of the scarring that life causes? Because life is hard. Who feels threatening to me? And why is that? There are legitimate reasons. Who am I in relationship with simply because they benefit me in some way? These are all of the ideas underlying what Paul is tackling as he says, this is how you behave. This is your new code of conduct in the household that is ruled by Christ, the suffering servant. Do I really believe Colossians 3:11? In this image there is neither Greek or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free. Christ is all things in all people. Do you believe that? If you did, how does that hit the ground in your life? So as we close today, this is my encouragement to you. Speak the gospel code of love to those who don't understand it, and speak it until they do. Let's worship.